Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six! Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has night. Bond! Touchdown, Chargers!
Boys, grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Thunder Woo! Down on the Chargers podcast. It is the 2024 end of season roundtable, and we are here on YouTube Live for the first time. So, tune in and thanks for joining us. Some familiar faces, of course. We're hoping we've just got a bit of technical difficulties on one end of the planet, but man, Andy, Al, Jack here with Woo! Our great buddy from the US of A, Kyle D. What's happening, brother?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
You?
I'm Kyle.
I thought we retired it, Jack. I thought we retired
it. I couldn't. It's such a great theme song. Give me those numbers,
Kyle. Kyle. Let's keep it weird. Keeping it weird. I love it.
You doing good, Kyle?
Doing great, guys. Doing great. Great to see you guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm hopefully we get Ryan on here too. Ryan and I are hoping to keep recording after this and do something for Powder Keg for the first time in a long time. Looks like we lost Al too.
Ah, now we've lost Alistair. Oh, well, that's the joy of doing a live show. That's a live show, baby.
Yeah, but I'm fired up for this, guys. So I can't wait. Great seeing you guys.
Great to have you on board. It's good that we could organize this. Jack, how are you doing, my man?
I'm good, man. Just enjoying my last day before the kids come back to school. It's been a very long summer holidays. I've been off since like early December. So just been enjoying time with family, and unfortunately the season ended. I wish we were watching next Monday, Sunday for you guys, Super Bowl Sunday, but we're watching the Chargers, but we're not. So it is what it is. I'll still enjoy it. I've got the day off as well, which is even better.
Fantastic, man. Fantastic. I can see guys in the comment section, keep it coming, throw some questions out, and Al, when he's back, will be controlling some stuff coming in. Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
He's the second.
Okay, here's Ryan. There we go.
Hey,
he's there.
Hey, Ryan. What's up, buddy?
My boys.
Hey, welcome, man. we've got the two masters of dross, as Kyle mentioned, from the Powder Keg podcast. You might know them as well for all the tireless efforts they put in on Storm Cloud. So his face, and we're happy to get them both on our show and actually finally shoot the shit with you, because Jack name drops Ryan 50 times over the course of the season on the show, and he's a bit of a mystery of a bloke. So
hey, when there is quality content and there's quality analysis, I've got to give kudos to where kudos is due, man. Like, Ryan's articles are something else.
Yeah, I'm glad that's right. Reads them. So that's a positive for me, anyway.
You are a teacher, always doing your citing your references well, Jack, so can't criticize you too.
Always. You just
make me laugh. On the show today, as I said, round table for season 2024. Our first YouTube live foray. So if you're tuning in, as I said, please hit us up with questions and comments as we go. We'll be throwing some out at the boys. Jack's whipped up a little bit of a best takes draft, which I'll let him explain in further depth in due time. A bit of red light, green light. Al seems to be infatuated with the Squid Game, so he's bringing that to the table. And look, we couldn't have some international guests from either side of the two big ponds of the world without the good old Aussie quiz. So let's get it, dudes. I'll throw it over to you, Jack. Kick us off, man.
Okay, so let's go. We have decided to do a three-round little draft. And now how this is kind of set up is that it's the 2024 Bolts Best Takes Draft. Now, these best takes can be positive, they can be negative, they can be something outside of the organization if you continuously make a link there. But how it's going to work is that we're going to have 15 picks, obviously. It's a snake.
Just
it's
quickly, Jack,
draft.
Only in a Jack Reed segment could a Bolts take draft include
takes, not about the bolts. I love it.
I made up some rules and I'm going to play outside them.
It's those links, baby. You know, you've got to create the house and then you play outside of it. That's what you do. Create the framework and move beyond it. Anyway, so what's going to happen now is I would like Kyle and Ryan to play a quick game of rock, paper, scissors, and the winner is going to pick the order of the draft. And just to let everyone know, it's a snake draft, which means that if you pick first in the first round, you're picking last in the second round, so on and so forth, okay? So Ryan and Kyle, do a quick round of rock, paper, scissors.
Could this be the greatest distance between a rock, paper, scissors match ever? I don't know.
I think it could be. Yeah. And the lag.
For the audio listeners, I'll give the live call. So we got Ryan, we got Carl, we got Ryan, we got Carl. Rock, paper, scissors, rock, paper, scissors. Here we go.
All right. 1, 2, 3, shoot. Is that how we're going to do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. 1, 2, 3, shoot.
Shit. Get the hand up. You got me.
I can't see it. Oh, it's paper.
You got me.
All right. There's Ryan. Okay, Ryan, what will the order of today's 2024 TDU Best Takes draft be?
All right. We're going to go Andy 1.
Ooh, okay. Yep.
Al 2.
Who's that? Alistair? Yep.
Me 3.
Yep.
Kyle 4. And Jack with the back-to-back.
Oh, perfect. Okay. That actually makes my life very easy. Yeah. Awesome. Perfect. All right. So we will. What's going to happen is I'm going to share this draft board now. Here we go. And we're going to have 2 minutes to talk about each draft pick. When you're making your draft pick, you've got 30 to 40 seconds to sort of talk about why you've taken this pick there. And then we should have about a minute 30 or so to jump in with any questions or any analysis. So it's pretty quick. But listen, if we're just a little bit longer than the timer, that's okay as well. And to let everyone know, the third round is a speed round as well. So there won't be too much discourse there. Are there any questions from anyone there?
No, sir. Let's rock it.
Okie dokie. All right. So, Andy, you have the pick number one in the TDU. I'll say it one more time. 2024 Best Takes Draft. What are you taking, my man?
I've been enamored by him all year. I can't veer away from getting on Ladd McConkey and pumping his tires. Bastard. I'm not a big one for controversial takes, but I think I might finish this one with a bit of that. So, obviously, rookie season I think he kept the Chargers offense out of a lot of trouble in the wake of losing Keenan Allen and Mike Williams during the offseason. Fans were torn about losing who could have been a would-be Charger for life, route-running superstar, missed a third down, Keenan Allen. Mm. But this second-round draft pick out of Georgia took to Justin Herbert's offense like a fish to water, surpassed Keenan's rookie receiving records, and became number 10's Mr. Reliable and showed an ability to beat zone, beat man coverage, his own crisp route running, yards after catch ability, and getting open in a way that only some know how. So from his breakout game against New Orleans in Week 8 through to the 197-yard game in the playoff loss to Houston, McConkey put together 11 straight games over 50 receiving yards, tallied 6 of his 8 total touchdowns, and completed 13 of 15 contested catches on the year. Not afraid to take a big hit, but certainly looked to fix that as the year went on. My controversial take is I think he's just replaced Keenan Allen, and life beyond this season is just going to be fine the way it's going with Ladd in that slot role.
All right, haven't left too much time, but that's okay. What have we got? I'm just saying that this is the best that we're going to... Well, this is the floor for Ladd McConkey, right? He's going to get better because there's going to be more weapons. Like he was Brock Bowers second at Georgia. This is going to be awesome. What say you, Al?
Yeah, I agree. So if the take is Ladd McConkey has made Keenan Allen an afterthought, woo, I totally agree. I haven't missed that... I'm going to say nearly obese receiver for the Bears at all. So I'm bringing some fire. Come on, let's get some takes going. We got any other quick questions or comments before we hit my take as number two?
Well, man, I think we do. Eric Vols has commented, do you think Herbert has a tendency to gravitate to the only wide receiver he has trust in? I think that's a really valuable or really important question because we know that Herbert has operated as a guy that trusts his receiver and goes to the guy he trusts. So I think he does have a tendency, Eric. I'm hoping that as this offense grows and builds and the vibe around the the game planning with Greg Broman. I'm hoping that changes, but certainly as this year went on, he put a lot of weight on a rookie, and it came good. So hopefully he doesn't have to just have a tendency to trust, but hey, it happened and it worked.
He's never had more than one option.
Yeah, that's true.
Like whenever Keenan was his guy, Mike was unreliable at the time. And then when Keenan went out, Mike was then the guy. Yeah. So, like, he's never had two genuine passing threats to target. So I think further on down the line, we can judge that a little bit more.
Yeah.
All right. Love it. All right, Alistair, let's kick us off with your first round draft pick. Pick at number two.
All right, here's my hot take, and I think a lot of people are naturally going to disagree with it. We all watched the Texans game, 0 rush attempts to Justin Herbert. My take is for the Greg Roman offense to take the Chargers to the Super Bowl, they need to start leaning heavily into the design quarterback run game, RPO game, triple option, read option. The reason why I say this, Ryan, you just posted a banging article. Greg Roman used the second most 20 personnel in the league. Multiple backs, you have multiple tight ends. When Greg Roman was with the Ravens, Lamar, in 2019, had 196 rush attempts. That was the year they were number one in the NFL in points scored. The next year, 184 rush attempts, 7th in scoring. Now, listen to this. In 2021, that rush attempts for the QB came down to 133, and the Ravens were then 17th in points scoring. This year, Herbert only had 69 rush attempts. They finish 11th. If you're going to go with Greg Roman, lean right in, because when you have all those heavier personnels, it's harder to pass out of those groupings. If you run with Herbert 10 times a game, I'm talking Oregon in the Rose Bowl stuff, you've got an extra lead blocker as a halfback or a fullback. If you're going to go Greg Roman, go the full way, get Herbert involved. What do you guys say?
That goes back to Kaepernick as well, and further back to Andrew Luck at Stanford. Like, that's what they do. Like, they've always used that as the threat. And you're right, in the Texans game, it was just completely lacking.
Okay, I like it, because with Lamar, you see that threat to run is critical to springing Derrick Henry runs open, right? They can run it out of the pistol. You see Josh Allen does it. I feel like these offenses that are run first need the quarterback to be a true threat, or you may as well hire a different offensive coordinator. Come on, I thought we'd see some disagreement.
I think you nailed it, Al. I think everyone agrees with that. I think we've talked about it separately too, right? What some people won't see on the show is that massive group text we have where we're all hammering this as well. I totally agree with you. And I think the biggest pushback you're going to get is, can he stay healthy while running the ball like that? And I personally, the answer for me there is, I'm less concerned when he's moving forward than I am when he's in that pocket that we've seen collapse so much. It's easy to get rolled up on that way. So I like it.
Okay.
I
was just going to say, I wonder if it was the, you know, starting the season out injured and things like that, that maybe it was hard to sort of get a bit of momentum. But, you know, as the season went on and we saw games where the run game or Herbert using his legs worked and helped the offense, to see it kind of go back into its shell was a bit surprising and concerning, I think, for that playoff game.
Especially I really with wonder the way if, that
CJ Stroud used his legs and broke open a few drives himself.
I really wonder if D'Amico Ryan's just completely bamboozled Herbert at the line of scrimmage as well, and he had no clue or no option. It was just in his face all the time. Pick number one for Ryan. Pick at number three. What is your best take in round one?
So I've rated my takes as the Nando's spice levels, if any of you have ever been to England.
A cheeky Nando's.
Cheeky Nando's.
You probably love your Nando's.
I know. So I'm starting off with lemon and herb, the lightest you can go. So I'm going to go that the Chargers' big three free agents are all back. So that in its rate on defense. So that's Khalil Mack, Puna Ford, and Elijah Molden. All back.
I think the response to that hinges on the value of Puna Ford, and I think there's a wide range. And Kyle, I'll set you up, buddy, because look at guys who've played at his level are the types of guys who command $20 million per year at the defensive tackle position. If I was his agent, I'd be saying this guy was better than Quinnen Williams and all these expensive DTs. But Kyle, where do you think his value more truly lies?
So right now, as you guys know, Joshua, Capo, and I did another article where we projected all the free agent contracts. Josh did 99.9% of it because he came up with this algorithm that was incredible. And it basically can measure what somebody should get paid. Actually, this is good. I don't want to take up time from your draft, actually. So I won't get into that too hard. But if you look at his production over the last 3 years, he's estimated to get $6.5 million per year in a contract, probably a 2-year deal. If you take it as just his 1 year, we also measure what his contract should be based on his platform year's production, extrapolated out to a 3-year average. At that, he's only getting 8.5 still to 9. So it's showing that he should get a sub $10 million a year contract. There's a lot of comps and evidence for it.
Well, but Kyle, what differentiates him then at 8 million from guys who warrant 20 million? What would you say? If I'm the agent, I'd say he's played like these $20 million a year tackles. Why is Puna Ford not like those other guys?
Let me look up what our biggest measure, our biggest, when we measure this, Al, we ran correlations between what stat, like we ran all the stats in a correlation formula to see which stats correlate the most at each position to getting paid. And then we take the top 3 or 4 and we use them to come up with the data. For defensive tackles, it's pressure rate, hurries, pass rush grades, sacks, and pass rush percentage wins. And then those are all weighted to some way that, you know, based on how much they correlate. So Puna Ford, if I type him in right now, we can come back to this too if you'd like, if this is taking up time from our draft.
But, well, sorry, I was just going to say, while you're doing that, I was going to say that probably his last year at Buffalo would have really knocked his value. He didn't see the field. Like, from literally week 8, he was a healthy scratch, which is just absolutely insane looking back at it, but it does affect his future.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, you have a look, Carl, but like on Ryan's actual take, I think all three of those guys will be back personally. So I think it's a good take myself.
That's why it's a lemon and herb. Yeah.
And I think we all, I don't think we all agree regardless of the price point, right? I think if he signs for 12 or 15 million, we're all going to say, well, if that's what they value him at, let's roll with it. But like you said, Al, you're happy. You're happy up until 20 million probably.
I saw
ESPN had him at 5. So
ESPN had him at 5.
Wow. That is hot.
Think about Morgan Fox. Morgan Fox, we all thought was going to get a lot more. Then he comes back for like what? 2 years, $4 million a year because he had been cut by the Panthers before.
Either way, I just want to hear more of Jack saying Puna.
Puna! We need Puna.
All right. Kyle, well, you can kind of lead into if you wanted to continue on your take there, but you have pick number 4 in the best takes. There's some seriously good stuff for me picking back-to-back. That's all I can say at 5 and 6. I'm very, very excited. Kyle, what have you got to pick number 4?
Two key positions. What's it at 5 and 6, Jack?
I do.
So, fellas, a lot of times when you're drafting, you're not only worried about what's on the board, you're worried about who you're drafting against. And right now, I have Jack lined up to go back-to-back behind me. So I got to take my big boy take off the board. I can't let him take it from me. So we're going to shift things around on my draft board. And my first take is going to be, in an off-season of pure brilliance, the biggest and maybe only mistake that Joe Ortiz made was not dealing Trey Pipkins. Ryan's ears are burning right now because he's heard this way too much. And he's like, God damn it, we're resurrecting the 2024 take. But he should have dealt Trey Pipkins last year. Moving him to guard was a missed opportunity to trade for additional draft capital. It would have freed up almost $4 million in cap last year. We would have taken the dead cap then and would have saved an additional 2.5 in 2025. And it would have given Sawyer more opportunities to develop. To make matters worse, it was pretty predictable, I think, to everybody on this pod and all of our listeners listening right now and watching, that Trey was going to destroy his trade value at guard. And now there's no denying, I think, that he's got to be a cap casualty. I don't think anyone's going to trade for him at this point because of the year he had. And we also have the missed opportunity of Tom Telesco, who is the GM that would have valued him higher than anybody else in the league, is no longer a general manager, which We should have capitalized when he was there, when the opportunity was present, but we didn't. So that would be my biggest take, I believe.
Just to push back on that, do you think there's any chance that the fact that he had a full year at guard where I would say he was just about an average, below average to average starter who'd never played the position could make him more attractive because you know he can play right tackle and now you know in a pinch he's got the reps at guard?
I don't. Personally, do you think he played close to average at guard? Because I feel like he was just a liability and showed that it's not a matter of his technique or anything that can be developed upon. And I'm sure that can get better too, but he just doesn't have the functional strength to be an interior offensive lineman in my mind.
No, I 100% agree there. I just don't think Pipkins has the body. He is athletic enough to perhaps get to the second level and block, but I just don't think he's got the leverage. I just don't think he has the power. At tackle, he was okay at right tackle for a while, but I just don't see where this guy fits in, to be honest.
Allegiance, and I want you to know, I love Ortiz and thought he did a bang-up job as well. This was the one little thing that I did not like.
Well, there we go. There we go. And who's got that one there? Ortiz's biggest whiff. Have you got that one, Andy?
Yeah, I've seen that. Biggest whiff was not drafting a center and drafting a Boigby in the fourth round. Jackal.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I was ran through the mud. My name was cursed for saying, why did we draft Justin Aboigbe? And I said I didn't like him. Hasn't seen the field yet, so the jury is still out on that. But thank you so much. I agree. We should have drafted a center, perhaps.
We just got to say, all right, listeners, don't validate Jack. You'll never hear
the level. You can just saw the level of excitement. The level of excitement is just crazy.
I am the greatest.
<Come on. laughs> All right, no, I'm going back to back, and I can't believe that some of these are still on the board. My first and most safe take, and the most powerful take, I think, is the Harbaugh hire. How have we not mentioned him? It's been a very long time in any of my professional sporting teams, other than perhaps Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp, that I've had someone of his esteemed nature take the reins. And I think it's just super exciting to where we go in the next 2 to 3 years. If this is the bar, which is 10 wins, 11 wins, which is the low bar, I am super excited to see what's happening in the next couple of years. Alistair, anything to say on Harbaugh? What's your biggest kind of attaboy, Harbaugh boy?
It's too good a take to really disagree, and it should not have lasted to pick 5. I think some of us are getting cute. I've got myself in mind. We're picking like intricate parts of the offense, and you've just taken the easy. You've taken the layup that the Chargers have gone from 5 wins to 11 wins in a
slam
season.
Dunk, please. Slam
after
dunk.
Inheriting,
not a layup.
After inheriting what could have been described as a cap fiasco and trying to form a team with retreads, one-year free agents, guys picked for different schemes, and he's just brought it all together in a way that, as lame as I think the he's a jolly good fellow thing is after the games, the players are freaking singing along with gusto. So he is probably the most exciting thing about the Chargers moving into the next 2 years. So great take, Jack. You get more validation from me.
Come on, keep filling my cup, guys. I'm loving it. This is great for Sunday morning.
Coach Ryan, let's hear from Coach Ryan.
I think it was such an obvious take that I didn't even add to my notes.
We've got Lowey saying Jack from the top rope. Lowey, you've got to remind us, are you based in Belgium, brother? I think we've got listeners all over the world clamoring to agree with the big Jack.
I will say I was on Ryan's same page and I thought there needed to be a certain level of spice to it, you know. This that's not a hot take.
Hey, listen, if I'm coming from the top rope, the whole ring is collapsing, all right? I can tell you that much, as well as the person's spine that I'm landing on.
Sorry, Ireland, we need a bit of whiskey in our coffee this morning.
Whiskey in the jar.
Yeah, so it was best. It was best. It was best take. So he's taken the easy one.
I've taken the easy one. All right, I'm going to go a little bit left of field now because I've taken my very safe take. I've taken Brock Bowers. I've taken, dare I say, not Caleb Williams with my first pick. And I'm going to go with the fact is, I think that, and this kind of might lead into my red light, green light, but I think that Spanoses are finally spending money where money should be spent. And that is my the first pick of the second round. And it might be controversial because we all have different takes on the Spanai and what they've done over the last sort of 10 or so years. But the Bolt is incredible. The way that they're spending money on their coaching staff and their front office, I think, is to be applauded. I think, Kyle, you know, you're in that area. You've seen the move from San Diego to LA. How are you feeling as sort of like a Californian? You know, is we don't know whether the, you know, are the Rams bigger? Are the Bolts bigger? What say you? And how do you feel about the Spanos is perhaps finally spending the money that the Chargers deserve?
It's really bittersweet, Jack. It's really bittersweet because as a San Diego guy, it's, you know, it's hard to see them make these moves now. When, you know, they could have, when they were in San Diego or could have shown a little more commitment to spending, at least maybe building their own stadium. But hey, that's neither here nor there. I said, when Jim Harbaugh got hired, that there was going to be no talk of cheap and no talk of them not spending. Cause they did, they went out and did it and it's incredible. And they're putting they're showing that they're committed to putting a better product on the field, which is great. So I love this take, Jack. This is one of my favorites because, Eric, you're hurting my feelings now. That's not kind. That is not kind because you know that there's some Padres Dodgers drama right now and we don't need that. Yeah. But,
Eric, just firing shots from the East Coast, just, New York area. He's like, boom, boom, drop a grenade.
But yeah, it's a great take, Jack. I think the Spanos family deserves some grace. And I can't really speak to how electric it is up there and if they're pulling fans from the Rams and starting to dominate LA, because it's just not my area and it's still a civil war down here. If you're a Chargers fan in San Diego and you're a baseball fan as well, you're getting blasted from both sides, from the Dodgers crowd that follows the Chargers or like, you freaking Padres fan, and from Padres fans are like, why the hell are you supporting a team in LA? So it's a weird vibe.
It's interesting for me, I'm far, far away from all of this, but with the Spano, they're now considered okay owners because of the Harbaugh move, A, and B, because of the entirety of the rest of the NFL, like ridiculously bad owners rising even further into the, like towards the abyss, because there are some horrendously bad owners. Mm-hmm. Like the club one closest to the UK, Shad Khan, like showing his absolute worth. So yeah, the Spanoi, by making the easy, dare I say, jack pick, just going straight down the middle, have elevated themselves quite well.
Well, there we go. All right, Kyle, we're into the second round now. So second pick of the second round, what do you got for me?
Okay, little bit of rule clarification. So we're going with like best that everyone's going to agree with, or ones that make you scratch your head and you're like,
hey, boy, it's your draft room, buddy. It's your draft board. If you want to be Tom Telesco in the third round, that is entirely up to you. That is entirely up to you, my man.
All right. My second take is going to be that the Chargers should absolutely double dip at tight end in the draft. It's a deep draft at tight end, but there's also amazing top end talent. So we could see a Warren get picked up in the first round. Or whoever, I would actually defer to Watkins on this one, whoever he thinks would mesh best. But there are such threats as well later in the draft that even if we get a blue chipper in the first or second, I want them to go back, get another guy. Because even though our receivers were struggling, I felt like the biggest thing missing this year was a true dominant tight end, but also depth at that position as well. So what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think, are we a bit sort of once bitten twice shy after bringing in Disley and Hurst and thinking that a bit of experience would be helpful in that room, and then it not working out, and then you've got guys like Warren and Loveland at least at the top and a deep class going, hey, how about we just get a couple of kids with some raw ability that we can kind of mold into what we want, rather than trying to rehash guys that have showed a little bit and obviously, well, Hurst in particular, body failed. Disley was great until he forgot how to catch the ball. So I don't know. That's sort of how I see it and where I could agree with you. I know the class is deep without having looked into it too much, but I don't hate the idea, Kyle. It's definitely a position in need.
A great question by Eric. Would you still want to double dip if we don't get Warren or Loveland? I haven't gone into the draft class enough yet, but if we, another take, somebody could steal this, could be, was it a good idea to double dip at wide receiver in the seventh? I still think that was a good procedural idea. And I wouldn't be upset if we double dipped in day three at tight end and just to see what we could get there. Even if one of them gets stashed on the in the practice squad, which as we've talked about, if you get waived in the seventh round, you are going to end up on a practice squad, on your practice squad. So it's not a big deal.
I think it's a smart strategy, but mainly also because Roman's system requires, the basis of his playbook is 21 personnel. So there's heavy tight ends, but the Chargers have two under contract, if I'm right. So we've got Disley and Smart. I think they're two viable tight ends within the, I don't know, practice squad members, whether they're under contract still. Hurst is gone. He should be cut if he's not gone already. But we need a H-back. That is the big one that I'd say. And also, I don't know if you guys have looked at the free agent market for tight end.
I've got it up now, Ryan. I'll read them out. Do you think any of these guys could do that H-back role? The four key free agent tight ends, Juwan Johnson from the Saints, Mike Gesicki from various places, Tyler Conklin from the Jets, Zach Ertz, who's at Methuselah's age at this point of his career, but playing all right for the Commanders.
None of those guys come close to playing a H-back. You're looking at an Isaiah Lake, type, really hyper-athletic guys. And if you look at the RAS scores coming out of the last few classes at tight end, they are ridiculous. But every single time someone tests, it feels like there's a new 9.99. So, like...
Ryan. Poor Tucker Fisk.
I am a Tucker Fisk fan.
There's a
Matt Lock. I don't want to see as many snaps of Nat Lock again. Like I loved him as like a gimmick, but when he's playing 50% of the snaps in the of the offense in a playoff game, it's not a good sign. And I feel like that H-back role is really vital. So if you're going to get a true dominant Y, like your Warren or your Loveland, I wouldn't go Arroyo from Miami. I haven't fully gotten to his type yet, but he's basically a big slot. So if you don't get one of those two, it gets really interesting. But yeah, further down the line, you can get H-backs on day three. So I think that's where you doubled it.
So Ryan, I'm just putting your draft pick is Tucker Fisk is the guy. That's what I'm putting. That's what I hear from there. So before we get into that pick, Ryan, I just think there needs to be some athleticism in that tight end room. We haven't had it for a long time. I wouldn't call Hunter Henry the most athletic. Let's go back to the Gates days, dare I say, and have this guy that can do all sorts of stuff and route running. Ryan, what do we got? What do we got in your second round?
We're gonna ramp it up a little bit. I'm gonna go that Josh Sweat will be wearing powder blue next season.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wowee.
So it's types for me. So we're gonna have Thule on the other side, and the big thing for me is that it's got to be speed. Speed edge rusher. Like I absolutely love Khalil Mack, but for a rotation to rotate in a stiff Joey Bosa, who is absolutely going to get a cut. I don't think there's any debate there. That could be a take for someone else, but I feel like the speed is the biggest thing. That like anyone just the tackle's just overset, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Khalil Mack will try and go through your chest. Thule does the same thing. There was no like, I love the tandem, but there needs to be a change up. To use baseball terms, which I have no idea about that sport. So
it's cricket for Americans.
I think I don't know if you guys read Daniel Popper's breakdown about how much the Chargers can spend this offseason, and you can put in four or five big contracts, but that's without the Bosa cut and the Pipkins cut and any other extensions and financial leverages that they can pull. So I feel like they will hit big at that position.
I'm just going to go off the back of that and say exactly what I said before. Perhaps, Josh Sweat is a bit of an athletic beast. You're saying that we need athletic beasts in the tight end room. We need athletic beasts at the edge position. perhaps it's time, you know, that's probably the Raw Athletic score is something that we should be looking at. And maybe if you're listening here and listeners, have a look at that Raw Athletic score and see where each of our draft picks rank, because that's a really good indicator. And dare I say, because I picked that Isaiah Spiller might be absolutely something incredible. But Alistair, you'll always say that Raw Athletic score is one of the good indicators, not the best, but a very, very good tool to use whether a draft pick's going to be successful or not.
So, especially for certain positions, I would Ryan, say.
If Bosa is gone, but they retain Mac, do you think they can get what they need out of a day three pick with high traits?
Yeah. I think if you're going to find like a Chop Robinson-esque type who is just all blazing power and bend at 240.
Oh, Chris Rumphian, you're saying, Ryan?
I am saying Chop Robinson. Look, I think the biggest thing is that you're now seeing these lighter edges go so high because of their flexibility to cover, even just a little bit. Yeah. You saw Thule this year, like, and I still think he's going to go up a level next year in terms of his pass coverage. He's actually genuinely a very good coverage guy. He did it a little bit at USC, but not nearly to the levels he's been asked to do it first under Staley and then now under Minter. So I feel like those 240 guys, I mean, who did the Vikings take in the first round from Alabama? Dallas Turner, right? They traded a silly amount from him, like way too much, but he started to add that value at the end of the season because of his athleticism as such a light size. So I feel like if they did bring Mac back and have Thule, they still need that third guy, but they could get him later on.
Love it. Nice. I agree. It'd be awesome to see Sweat in the Powder Blues. Alistair, let's go. Almost at the bottom of the second round.
Yeah, all right. The last longer take before our speed round three. Here's my second take. The Chargers should not be complacent at the cornerback position. I've seen a lot of talk out there that the team survived with Christian Fulton on a one-year deal and found hits with Cam Hart, Tahib Steele, but it is still an important position. And I think where the Chargers are drafting at pick 22, there will be a lot of good talent there. I've only started getting into the tape, but Z's team, Kyle, you've got Benjamin Morrison coming off an injury from Notre Dame. He might be very good value at that spot as a potential true CB1. You've got Jadae Barron, Trey Amos, Siobhan Revelle, and even just the risk associated with Cam Hart, who has struggled with some concussion issues early in his career. And it is an area that the Chargers were exploited this year. Wide receivers, big X receivers like Nico Collins in the wild card round, Mike Evans, T. Higgins. It is still an area the team can improve. So I would not push that way down the list. But there are some free agent options. So I'm not saying it must be in the draft, but I think the team needs to address corner, even though the defense played so well this year.
Before we give our opinions on that, Bolton, that's a guy that was starting, that's now a free agent. How do you feel about that? Is improving, letting him walk and collecting a comp pick, or is it bringing him back?
I'll let Ryan go on that one. What do you think about Fulton's year as the defensive
some of you guys remember from our chat that he had a couple of outstanding games where he made some incredibly athletic plays. However, the grabbiness, as Jack is very much indicating too, came into it. And I thought when it came to the playoffs, that's where he would earn his medal. Wasn't to be the case. And personally, I feel like the comp pick he'll get back will not be worth it. I feel like I would bring him back, keep some depth and continuity at a complex position. It's a take I've got for later on, but the problem with cornerbacks right now is the lack of continuity and the lack of system translation. So I would very much encourage just to keep a familiar face in if it's not going to cost much. And I don't think he will. I feel like he'll be a CB.
Ryan, yeah. two years, $6 million a year. You bring him back?
Well, that's a little bit rich. He wasn't earning that much last year. Like, isn't like he was on a one-year one.
He was 1 year, 3.125, but he had been cut.
I think that's on the cusp for me, but yeah. I would encourage continuity.
Wait and see on Christian Fulton. Andy, long time between drinks, brother. But now you've got two back-to-back. You got a fireball and a fireball. Boom, boom.
I was just going to say I've had to be a bit quiet because a few of mine have flown off the board. That's the way it goes.
So you've got the full liquor here because this is at the bottom of the second, so we can chat about it as well. And then we go straight into your speed round, okay?
Brilliant, yeah, mate. No worries. My first take, not a super spicy one, but it's one where you've just got to see it for what it was. Jesse Minter announced himself in the pros as a defensive coordinator this year. The turnaround, we spoke about Harbaugh's influence. Sure, that helped Jesse Minter as well. The defense finished first in scoring, 11th in yards allowed, and behind Jesse Minter, 9th in defensive DVOA and 5th in defensive EPA per play. For context, from Staley's defense last year, in 2023, the team was 24th in EPA, improving by 0.073 over the course of one season. So it's a true testament to the simplicity and efficiency of Minter's defensive scheme when you're rolling out fresh free agents on the interior of the defensive line, rookies playing cornerback, quite amazing. However, over that stretch of playing some decent offenses, there was some exposure to the team not quite, well, the defensive unit not quite being there. So there's still work to be done, but I think Jesse Minter definitely announced himself as a premier defensive coordinator with the cattle that he had. So very
love impressed. It.
Any thoughts on that, guys? Disagreements otherwise?
When you said announcing himself as a premier DC, I was wondering if you meant he has no plans on going to head coach just yet.
No, but I think he made it clear this year that it wasn't like a looking for a one and done. And I think it would have been, you know, the league is probably quite cautious of that, you know, looking at how Staley went on, you know, Salah came to head coaching, things sort of fell apart. Not to say that it's all the coach's fault, but it's happened a couple of times. D'Amico Ryan's obviously the opposite of that, where a DC goes into a head coaching role. But after 1 year, I'd like to see him hang around and we'll see where he can kind of get this team to before he starts wanting to take his services to a more head coaching role.
There seems to be a really good synergy between whatever Minter wants to do and where Hortiz can find guys off the scrap heap as well, because the quality of play that we had across all three levels, right, has been really, really good. So it's really nice to see that there's going to be continuity in that sense, not only on the field, but also perhaps for in terms of what Hortiz and the front office want to do in the offseason. And I wonder if we're going to go very hard on offense in the draft and, again, just go piecemeal, a couple of big contracts perhaps from the front office on defense, because there's kind of that synergy between players coming in and knowing exactly what to do because of also perhaps the leadership in some of the coaching rooms that I'm not going to talk about maybe until red light, green light. Anything else before we jump into the speed round, boys? All done, all silent. Okay. Andy, let's go. Speed round. What is your speed round? What is your take? You're going to go back to back here, my boy?
Yeah, I'm going the value of Hortiz playing the game with free agent contracts last year, knowing that the cap space here will kind of negate that. So when you're looking at guys, like, we're probably not going to be able to keep them all. Tart, Molden, Ford, Fulton, Perryman, all on one-year deals. Some will stay, some will go, but as the years go on, I think we'll find that we're less inclined to get the compensatory pick. So I think he's started off playing that game incredibly well.
Love it. Alistair.
Well, I was going to say, if we do a vote at the end here, we said Ryan's takes were lemon and herb. Andy's gone with McConkey is good, Joe Hortiz is good, and Jesse Minter is good. Fuck me. All right. My hot take, if you were to force me to choose between keeping Joey Bosa or re-signing Keenan Allen, which I've heard a lot of people talk about, I'm a loyalist. I would look at extending Bosa in a way that finds him to remain a Charger because he loves the city. He still offers value as an edge setter, played quite well in the wild card round against the Texans, and Keenan would eat up some of those snaps McConkey takes from the slot, which is where Keenan best operates at this point of the career. I'm not saying I would do either of those, but if you made me choose, I'm not forgiving Keenan for leaving the team.
You're only saying that because you're still wearing a 97 Bolts jersey.
I don't want to keep being able to wear it.
And you're a tight ass and you don't want it to mean nothing.
Ryan, what is your third round pick?
So it's not my original take, but I think that the Chargers are going to trade for DK Metcalf. I want T. Higgins like Raiders want to be relevant, but the opportunity cost of Metcalf at $10 million for a single season, obviously you can't pick beyond that, but also just how much sense it makes. Sanjay Lau's relationship with him. The Seahawks have just hired a really run-heavy offensive coordinator. And also, it just makes so much sense overall. And also, Diane Henney posting that little cheeky picture with working out with DK Metcalf. So I feel like it's leaning towards happening. I see it.
That man is an absolute Adonis. He had a six-pack when he was birthed out of the womb, I think. Kyle, your last pick of the three-round draft.
I got to be so careful with how I word this. I would say that the person that is more important to the sustained success of the Chargers between Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh is currently Jim Harbaugh. And if one had to go, it would end up being Justin Herbert before Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, we were waiting for that. There we go.
Spicy,
I love it.
Spicy meatball.
And you've also left it to the last, which means no one can really respond. So we'll leave it to the comments. That's an interesting one. My last one to round out the draft, and this is something to do with food. The only reason why we won 10-plus games this year is because there was a pizza oven at the Bolt. When you eat pizza, you're happy. And when you eat pizza, you win games. Well done, Spanos. Well done, Wolfgang Puck. Everyone loves eating pizza. So that is my, including me, that is my last take. And so that ends the... I hope everyone enjoyed that, by the way, for this listening. It's gone a little longer than we expected, but that's great because I think there was some good stuff there. You can see on the screen there, and we'd love if... hold on, I'll just continue. I'll finish it at the Bolt. There we go.
Listen, do a quick recap. Chime in with who you think had the best draft. I don't think Kyle's winning. Just
I don't think I'm going to win. Yeah, no.
Oh, but we covered a lot there. We covered free agency. We covered front office. We covered contracts. We covered some games. Let us know in the comments, guys.
We've got Alex in store. Hey, brother.
Getting the nails across for Kyle. Oh, that's good fun. All right, that does it. Thanks, guys. That was really good fun. We might post this up on our socials as well, so people can have a look out. We post it on X, and we can go from there. Andy, I'll hand it back over to you.
Yeah, mate. Well, look, I don't know who won. I think there's some great points across, some way spicier takes and some safer takes. That's just how it goes. It is the round table. It is the covering of season 2024. So I guess we've got to cover all those little tidbits here and there. But we'll move along to red light, green light. We have developed a few statements each about the Chargers or the NFL. We're going to go around the horn and shoot our statements at one person in particular. If I ask Ryan, you just say green light if you agree with the question, or red light if you disagree. So I'm going to let Al start off.
Okay.
And we'll just go from there. So if you get asked a question, you just hand over and ask the next one.
Okay.
Let's go.
Jack, you're in the firing line. Okay. Hey, Jack. The refs do not favor the Chiefs. People are seeing an NFL conspiracy where none exists.
I have just the person in me that is just sort of critical and factual, I'd have to say green light, because to have that big of a conspiracy with that many people involved in it would be unbelievable. It's Brady. It's winners win. Winners get the calls. Winners just win. So, I'm going to say green light on that one.
I love it, Jack. And if you subscribe to too many conspiracy theories before too long, you're doing the my heart goes out to you gesture.
Yeah, it is. Okay, I'm going to shoot one off to Kyle. And this is an interesting one as an American, the only American on this podcast. The NFL playoff system is flawed and does not allow the best teams to compete. And average teams continue to make the playoffs, meaning mostly poor viewing. It needs changing. What say you, red light, green light?
The NFL system, the NFL playoffs?
Yes.
I like the system right now. I'd give that a red light.
Good.
Yeah, I'd give that a red light. I'm interested. I want to hear more about that take from you though, Jack. I that's one I'd love to
You said too many teams?
He means the Bengals should have made the playoffs.
Are you getting it, like, are you getting it, like, the wild card system, the home field advantage of, you know, teams that are in shit divisions winning the division, getting a home game doesn't work?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like you if you're in a weak division, and depending on, like, you can still make the playoffs, whereas far better teams in stronger divisions don't. Like, I see that as a bit of an equity thing.
It should just be, the seeding should just be based off the best win-loss record over the course of the season, and even if you win the NFC South with a 9-8 record, you're not guaranteed a playoff spot.
I kind of have that because all of a sudden the Chargers find themselves in possibly the most or the best coach division in football and possibly one of the strongest in the next couple of years. So we'll see what happens.
I would change that to yellow light based on what Andy said. I don't think they need to change how many teams get in, but I think the seeding could be changed for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, based on record.
Oh, great call. Ireland firing off the rugby union. Cop that, McCall.
Never offside for
the All Blacks. Cop that, Jack. Cop that.
Richie McCall was one of the best captains of any team ever. I will not take that slander. That is disgraceful.
Apparently, it was a cheat.
You guys from Australia.
I have to make a statement now, right? It goes to whoever gets it passed to. Okay, so I'm sending this one to Al, since he's a lawyer. I think the NFL needs to be as transparent with the CBA, with the NFLRA, that's the NFL Referees Association, building off of Andy's take, as they are with the NFLPA. If you look at the NFLPA's CBA, that's available and online. So why isn't the CBA with the NFL Referees Association online for all to read? That's where I think disclosure agreements, NDAs could possibly be, you know, factored in if we're talking about conspiracy theories.
Okay. I'm glad you didn't ask me about Justin Tucker, because that's where I thought you were going when you lined me up as the lawyer on the show.
Number two.
Transparency in good governance is a important thing. So I think I green light that take. If you're going to have transparency of certain key documents, the one that guides the referees should also be put up. Good take. All right. I'll throw one to you, Ryan. You're the defensive coach on the show, brother. You're the coach on the show, the only coach, even though Jack thinks he is. All right. Coaches love to say, it isn't about the X's and O's, it's about the Jimmies and the Joes. That's BS. The X's and O's are, in fact, critically important.
I was very much Team Greenlight until this season. Okay. Yeah. I am still Team Greenlight, but I have come further towards the red with that, because you look at, like, I know he's much maligned on this panel, but Aaron Glenn, the way he was able to get pretty impressive production out of guys who are cast-offs, and so did Minta. But, like, for me, the big one that opened my eyes was actually the Texans game. Their scheme is so boring. Oh my God, it's so boring. But they just play hard and execute. And everyone from that 49ers coaching, defensive coaching tree does get the best out of their players. And I'm sat there going, they're playing quarters and early downs. On late downs, they're playing a 5-0 front with man behind it, and we can't touch them. We can't touch them because they coach up their guys. That's what Jimmy's and Joe's focus on, right? You just coach up your guys to do an amazing job. And Salah's going back to the 49ers, and that's going to be them going that path again. And the worm is turning, the Stiller Harbour expression, back towards that sort of style. But I am, as a coach, I have to be Team Greenlight on that take, because X's and O's for me will always be the essence of the game.
Okay. So you fire off a hot take now to one of us.
Okay. This one's for Andy. The Pro Bowl won't exist next year.
Oh, that's great. Green light. Oh, next year. I was thinking, like, in a couple of years.
I actually had 2 years written down, and then I saw some highlights earlier today of what.
What had Myles Garrett doing trivia? What the fuck are we doing?
They're walking. They're doing speed walking.
Yes.
That could be a sign of Joey's health. So let's be concerned. He decided not to run. He decided to speed walk. So I don't know.
You might actually get some more consistent production if you have him walking off the edge rather than trying to get around a thing and tearing a groin. I agree with I'm green light, Ryan. I think with when you see the caliber of players that are just going, nah, not interested, and it's becoming like a school holidays joke. For me, so I'm green light with that. I don't see any point in. It's always a bit of a farce as to who gets picked as well. So it's a popularity contest.
Absolutely,
I'm over it. I'm all for that. Jack, over to you, mate. The Chargers are this off-season away from being able to compete with the best, push a deep playoff run, and finally take the AFC West crown away from Kansas City.
I'll have to say green light as the ultimate optimist. It will have to do a lot to do with the draft, which will be my next red light, green light. But the cause there, it seems, in the front office, there's been consistency as well. I think that'll be a really big one for a lot of our leaders. And obviously the salary cap space is, if Ortiz did the job with nothing this year and we got 11 wins, I can only imagine what he's going to have with however many 100 million cap space and a lot more freedom to do what they want to do. So that's an absolute hard green light. I'm running through that with no top on, which is very scary for some people, including me. I'm going to go straight to Alistair. Kyle and I very much, and we saw in Kyle's draft that we might have started being questioning Herbert a little bit. So I'm going to see how you take this question. Ooh. Justin Herbert will have another regression in numbers performance in the 25-26 season. Ooh.
Can I ask for some clarification?
No, you got to take it as it is.
Certain numbers, yes, certain numbers, no. I don't think we're going to see any real diminution in his performance across key metrics, whether it's touchdowns, completion percentage.
Diminution.
Yeah.
Diminution.
He's going to be good. I think that's a red I'm red lighting the take because Justin Herbert arguably will have a lot to show. I think he'll spend the offseason hurting from what happened in that wild card round. And it's another year of familiarity in Greg Roman's scheme, plus better weapons around him, tight ends, wide receivers, interior offensive line, which we haven't even discussed on this show. So no, red light in Herbert, I trust, Kyle. All right. Andy, I'm going to throw this one at you, man. Head coaches should build a football team that suits their home environment. In this respect, Harbaugh and Roman's focus on the running game is inappropriate and incongruent with the Chargers playing inside a dome at SoFi Stadium.
Red light. We're seeing a lot of the top teams in the AFC and the NFC playing in outdoor stadiums. And at the end of the season, when it is the coldest, the weather is the most treacherous, you need to be able to run the ball. The focus of the offense and Harbaugh, Greg Roman, is to play rugged, poor weathered football. So even though we could excel with a, you know, Air Coyle style offense while we're playing in warmer months and in a dome, I still think that you need to be able to play outdoors. And Eric agrees with me, defense and run game travels. Nice. All right, over to me. I will throw this one at Ryan because you mentioned it in your little draft take. Paying T. Higgins as a free agent wide receiver is a smarter move for the team than trading for DK Metcalf. Red light, green light.
I have to say red light. I want T. Higgins. That's the guy that I think suits the Chargers in immensely more ways. However, the long-term impact of that contract compared to what DK Metcalf opportunity cost is right now, I think outweighs it. And this is coming from a coach perspective. I would really much rather have T. Higgins, but process is everything when it comes to team building, and trading a, what probably averages out at probably a third rounder for DK Metcalf, maybe even actually late pick in 22nd, probably second rounder and like get some change back. But you pay that, you get $10 million, you get to decide in 1 year if he's a fit for your team going forward, and you can have an extension on the table when he signs, which is probably what he's going to want. However, you don't have to put that in. So you could have him on that 1 year, play his ass off, get him into the system, see if he fits as that boundary X that we desperately need, get him the ball in his hand, see what he can do, and move on from there. I obviously would just, well, I've had dreams of T. Higgins in Chargers colours, so yeah, I'm going to red light.
What kind of dreams, Ryan?
Confusing.
like Mr. Burns flying in through the window dream? That's a great call, Ryan. There's a lot of unknowns with the DK Metcalf contract extension that, as Eric points out,
okay.
Higgins costs more, but there's picks and money involved with Metcalf.
So, yeah. Okay, this one's to Jack. I'm going to give you some context for this because you might not have them on the top of your mind. Considering the disaster of the last 2 years of trades, in-season trades across the entirety of the NFL, mm-hmm. I think we see that number drop dramatically. So for the last 2 years, we've seen 18 trades in 2024 in-season and 15 in 2023. I have given 4 of those positive grades.
Mm.
Across all 33, I think that number drops to less than 7 next year. That, like, when I say disaster, it has been awful. So the only good ones I've got are the Bills getting Rasul Douglas, the Bears getting Montez Sweat, which is this season he didn't have a massive impact. The Seahawks getting Leonard Williams, and the Chiefs getting DeAndre Hopkins.
I'd have to say, I'll green light that again, because I'll use your own language to reply, is that process is everything. And it just seems to me mid-season trades, the person who's trading never, ever generally gets the value perhaps that they want. But then at the same time, players want to leave. They want to do this kind of stuff. I just think it's...
Do you want to explain that one for the audio listeners, Andy?
My cousin Packers Dan has been in the chat throughout the day, and his lovely daughter has just always grown up calling me Auntie Andy, so she's chirped in with a little bit of humour.
Care to explain that one? That's not dream related, is it?
Absolutely not. It's good old fashioned just family humour.
To go back to what I was saying, I just don't think teams were big contracts anyway. I think there'll always be a movement of fringe guys, but perhaps, you know, there's so many, and Ortiz does it so well off the free agent market, there's just going to be guys moving from a practice squad, and with the salary cap and players and plans, I reckon it might stay the same, it might drop, so I'll green light that one.
One more little bit of context. I thought you would be the same. I thought it would be the same, there would be majority fringe guys.
Yeah,
I can count 5 total fringe guys out of those 33.
Really? They're all
starters. All of these trades are for starters, almost.
Well, maybe it's not a bad thing that Telesco never traded in season. Maybe that's a win for him. Anyway.
Jack, he never traded.
Okay. Ryan, I'm gonna shoot this back to you. Being a coach again, Harbaugh will be harder on his players in year 2. We will see more players cut and or not getting the snaps if they make mistakes. And I'll give you an example. What ended up happening at the end of the year with Pipkins and Solia? Red light, green light.
Green light. I mean, that's him. That's who he is. I think we've seen, like, you know, an older, more mellow version of Harbaugh compared to his 49ers days and even his Michigan days. But I actually thought, like, you know, well, maybe it's just because we've had a few years of Telesco, like, you know, just being like, oh, let's give him 3 years to see what he's like to about players. But like considering the amount of offseason moves, like the amount of like bottom roster churning that he did, that's going to continue. But how high up it spreads is going to be very interesting. I also feel like they can take the impact from, like, big contracts that they got from early on in the, you know, what they inherited. So, you know, Bosa, Mac and everyone like that. You can't really do a lot with that. You can't bench Bosa when he's earning $35 million a year completely. So, but they can do that now. Now they've got their foot in the door. So I'm going to green light that take.
Cool.
Oh, your take to send.
Okay, straight back. Okay, so okay, to Al, Pete Carroll will sign Kirk Cousins this offseason.
No,
for a little bit of context, he courted him heavily during the draft, the 2012 draft. And they've actually said that if they didn't take Russell Wilson, they would have taken Kirk Cousins. And he also looked at bringing him in during the 2022 offseason.
That's good context because I did not know either of those things. Do we know yet, Ryan, who is proposed to be the OC for the Raiders? It might be too early, and I'll let you think about that. But it makes as good a sense as any. I think the Raiders are loaded with cap space. I think they'll want to be competitive relatively quickly. I mean, they've brought in a very good coach who is on the older side of things for sure. So I don't know if he's going to want to spend 1, 2, 3 years rebuilding. And Kirk Cousins is an experienced guy. And if he liked him personally, it makes some sense. And I will say, I listened to his intro presser. I was more impressed with John Spytek, the new GM of the Las Vegas Raiders, who's come across from Tampa Bay. It was one of the best press conferences I've heard from anyone ever in the NFL. So I feel like the Raiders finally have adults in the room, a bit like we experienced last year, where you have Harbaugh and Ortiz. I have a feeling Carroll, Spytek, they'll have a plan, and I'll greenlight it, Ryan. I don't know if this is a great draft class. They're picking at 6. The attraction of someone like Kirk Cousins to come in, especially if they find a coordinator from a Shanahan type of system, makes sense to me. So good call. I have one more. In my
before
what
you
do you keep arrows in quiver
before yeah. you do Al Andy just outed himself with his pajamas right now.
Awesome. Okay. I've seen Andy in his gym jams 2 more times than I care to admit. Kyle, my last one's for you, man.
All right, buddy.
The Chargers lost to the Texans falls on Joe Ortiz. He should have made a move for a wide receiver before the trade deadline.
I had this one too, bud. Cool. No, I totally disagree. Well, actually, let me give that a yellow light because my take, Al, was going to be the Chargers would have won against the Texans if they had made that trade, but they wouldn't have made it to the conference championship. It would not have gotten them to the promised land. We would have had the same result. It would have just been a week later. So in terms of do I like the move as a whole to stay put and not make that trade, I do. I give that a green light. So
okay.
Again, how we word that, but yes. I red light then? Sorry. You said that the take was
yeah, red light. It's yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm with Eric that even with a great wide receiver, and at the time I was actually pitching that we should focus on tight end, not wide receiver. But even if we made one or both of those moves, that our interior offensive line would have still been such a problem that Herbert would have ran into the same issues. And you can't get an interior offensive lineman in the midseason. That's not available. So I will send that to... Let me see. Where do we want to go with this one? Okay, Ryan, I'm going to pepper you again, buddy, because you and I talked about this during the draft last year. If you remember, I said there's been enough talent that's fallen because of this run on tackles and quarterbacks that the Chargers should trade their 2025 first for a high second that year to go ahead and grab a Zach Frazier, a JPJ, or one of those stud defensive, I think there was like a stud defensive lineman, and Kool-Aid was there when we were talking about it. So the take in particular would be the Chargers should have traded their 2025 first for Zach Frazier or JPJ to get that stud center last year.
I am going to go red light.
Oh, because, red light.
Because hindsight's 2020. Yeah, first of all. You didn't know Zach Frazier was going to be as good as he would be. And we would therefore be looking at our first pick being 55 this year. Mm-hmm. So if we're not picking until 55, we can't make any trades with our first two picks because then you're not going to be picking until the 80s. Mm-hmm. And you'd also be out on interior offensive line, like, you know, star interior offensive line and big tight ends. So I think, again, this is afforded the ability to look back on it a year later. I think the process was right. Now we look back at it, I'm still not convinced about Jackson Powers Johnson. I mean, it's a guard, first of all, right now. He's not snapping the ball. And Zach Fraser, I think he's right for the Steelers system. Would he be a good fit, you know, leading, like where he has to completely control that interior? That'll be a question I'm not going to be able to answer without looking at a lot of Steelers film.
I love it. I love it. Right on.
Okay. I actually had my next take for you, Kyle. So this is a general NFL thing, but Howie Roseman is the best executive of the modern football era. And that's including, obviously, Veach and Belichick. Because Veach and Belichick had Belichick and Andy Reid. Howie Roseman has got three Super Bowls with Doug Peterson. Let's see, like, you know, process further down the line. And Nick Sirianni, who I'm not sure he even is allowed in team meetings.
Oh, man, that's a great question. And I would have to go with yes. I would actually give the runner-up might be to Snead. He has a smaller sample size. He hasn't been doing it for, you know, 15 or 20 years. But, you know, I think what he's done with the Rams, he made an all-in move to take a roster that didn't feel like it was ready to compete and to push for a championship. And then he traded Goff away, brought in Stafford for one of the most mutually beneficial trades we've seen, and won a Super Bowl. But most importantly, after that, really navigated the fallout from that very well, kept them competitive through compensatory picks and everything like that in the following years. I thought they were going to be one of the biggest Super Bowl hangover teams you could ask for, but he would be second or third. I still think Roseman would take first right now. I think building on that, Ryan, nothing shows me that Joe can't elevate to that level.
Well said.
Let's see. That was solid. Let's go with Andy. Keenan Allen, because this is kind of what I think you talked about as one of your takes. Keenan Allen's return shouldn't be a given with the emergence of Ladd. He might actually be a redundancy if they were to bring him on.
Green light. Agree with that completely. I see him still having an okay year in Chicago, but I stand by my take during the draft. And for what I saw Ladd McConkey do in the way that, you know, obviously there's a 13-year sample space of Keenan Allen's production as a Charger. I don't see the value in bringing back as Al put him, an obese 32-year-old wide receiver. That's going to anger a lot of Chargers fans, but they are not my words. I think that would be it would be more of an emotional decision. And I think with the new kind of front office and new sort of direction of the organization, there's no need, as Buck says, no need to bring it back.
Attaboy, Buck.
I'm about that. I've got one more, and I'm going to throw it to Al. And this is a little bit of a shout out to our buddy Athir as well. I had this red light, green light. You've asked the question too, Athir. Trey Smith, as far as free agents go, is the most important target for the Chargers this offseason. Red light, green light. Guard from KC, for you're not aware.
Yes. Aware of I'm aware. Trey Smith is.
It's more for everyone else, mate. I know you're aware. You know what college you went to.
What color undies he wears.
Yeah.
Look, the big question is how much do you value scheme specificity for your guards, right? And I don't know. I know that, like, people think Greg Roman is a gap scheme offensive coordinator and those are the guys who you should be targeting. I wonder if you don't look for people who might be less
limited in the way they play, because that kind of limits your creativity as a play caller, the type of runs you can play call, and maybe the coordinator gets fired in a couple of years' time. That said, I do think Trey Smith fits the bill for what the Chargers are looking for, which is a guy who's always been available, experience, playoff success, probably a bet. I would say he's a better run blocker than he is a pass protector. You've seen in the playoffs, he sometimes has some issues in protection, in pass protection, and he would be a massive upgrade over Trey Pipkins. The question is simply, though, do you want to go out and spend $20 million a year, $18 million a year on a guard in free agency? North of that, says Ryan. And that's where I'm going to yellow light it, because I haven't looked at who the other guards available are. I haven't looked into the draft class at all. On its face, though, if the Chargers want to splash and improve quickly, he's an obvious way to do it.
I'm just going to say, I didn't see in our notes that we were yellow lighting things.
It's a bit weak, isn't it?
It's nonsense. It's real, you know, you'll appreciate this, Ryan. It's real French behavior. It's it's being a coward, essentially.
It's been lemon and herb has been the theme of the show, I think. I'm out of taste, guys, so unless anyone wants to
okay. I'll do one more, and I just want a red light or a green light for all of you, because this is a spicy take, okay? And then we can go to the Aussie quiz, Andy. And don't need any, I don't need you to describe it. I just want to see what people think. And also for our listeners who are watching, it is actually not Harbaugh nor Hortiz that is responsible for the success of this year and this seemingly change of culture. It is all down to the Spanos family deciding to invest in the team. Red light, green light, we'll go Alistair, Kyle, Ryan, Andy, and back to me. Alistair, what say you?
Red light, it is Harbaugh, because they could have invested in someone else and we wouldn't have seen the same results.
Kyle?
It's green light, because we've seen them go the less expensive route so many times. So them actually changing their ways is what opened the door for it.
Love it. Ryan?
Red light. Hard red light. The owner has no influence over the locker room.
Love it. Andy?
I'm red light too. It took them 20 years to actually do their job. So,
and I'm going to go to make a complete car crash. I'm going to go orange light, because that was, and I can say orange light, even though I said you could only go red light or green light. That's done. Andy, over to you. That was a good segment. Thanks, guys.
Lots of fun. Golly. All right. It's the Aussie quiz time. We've got Kyle's copped it a couple of times. Ryan is here for his first Aussie quiz. I know that he's been doing a little bit of homework, because he feels it every time a guest gets embarrassed, and I reckon he's been brushing up on his absurd Aussie trivia knowledge. The way this is going to work, guys, we're going to each ask a question, and the two of you, Kyle and Ryan, are going to answer jointly. So we've got... I'll kick it off. I'll kick it off, and then Jack and Al will follow. And if you get 3 out of 3, I've got a real cheeky, funny bonus question for you guys. So first question, in Australia's unofficial national anthem, Waltzing Matilda, what is Waltzing Matilda? Is it A, girl seen dancing on the stage at a pub? B, the idea of travelling by foot with your belongings in a bag worn over your back? C, the dance performed to the song itself? Or D, the livestock that is attempted to be stolen that gets away?
What
the? Can you do a rendition, Andy, or...?
No. No, I can't. If you looked into anything, Waltz and Matilda would have come.
You have to work it out between yourselves.
Okay.
Oh, between the two of us? We're working it out.
Yeah, between the two of you. Yeah, working it out.
Okay, so for me, it's A or C. So it's definitely something to do with the dance.
Yeah.
And it would be such an Aussie thing to be A.
Is that the traveling one? Or is that the pub one?
A was the girl dancing on the stage in the corner of a pub.
And then the C is the dance itself, right?
That you do to the song.
Mm.
It's got to be A then, right?
Okay, let's go A. Let's
C
go
seems kind of redundant.
Are we locking in A?
The song is referencing, like, you're talking about the cha-cha or whatever. Like, it's a...
So Eric is.
What are we locking in?
Yeah,
Eric is saying I would guess B, which is an interesting one.
That is interesting. Going A?
Mm-hmm. Going
Eric, Eric is the man. Waltzing Matilda is the idea of traveling by foot with your belongings in a bag over your back. Nice, Eric.
Nice work, Eric.
Got to get him on the show. We might actually have someone who wins the Aussie quiz. All right, Oprah, what a great start.
Okay, I'll go next. You will know these, but which absolutely ridiculous original name were Maltesers given when they were first marketed in Australia by the American Forrest Mars Sr. in 1937? Is it A, Diet Chocky Spheres? Is it B, Calorie-Free Delusion Balls? Is it C, Energy Balls? Or is it D, a bag full of balls full of goodies?
An American advertising in Australia.
A bag full of goods, full of goodies. Or
a bag full of balls, full of goodies.
I think it's B or D. I'm like the 50-50 option on who wants to be a millionaire. I'm not that
drunk. You're the orange lot.
Apparently, I'm the one that picks the wrong one out of the 50-50 option. Well, I guess we didn't even get the B.
We weren't even close.
I was a kid, Ryan, and the question would stump me, I would always pick the longest one because the teacher put the most effort into it. So sure. I think this might be D. It's where my
Let's
goes.
Let's go D. I think D's D is fun. Let's go D.
Okay. It is not Diet Chocky Spheres. It is not Calorie-Free Delusion Balls. And it is not, unfortunately, a bag full of balls full of goodies. They were marketed as energy balls, and they were marketed towards ladies who were looking to lose weight as a health food. So there you go. Typical American.
America.
American marketing chocolate as a health food. So shots fired. I don't really mean that. It's just a bit of fun. Unfortunately, it was C, energy balls.
It's so hard not to make political jokes right now, but I shouldn't make political jokes because it's a hotbed in America right now. So
yeah.
All right. It's been a lemon and herb show, so we end with a lemon and herb straight up question. And if you've done any research, this has to be one you could definitely get. Australia's total population, what is it? Which figure is closest? A, 10 million. B, 30 million. C, 50 million. Or D, 70 million people in this country.
Jesus, age.
In this great southern land, 10, 30, 50, or 70. Ryan, I see you typing away on Google. None of that.
It's like, where can I get these energy balls?
I'll let you do the 50-50 work this time. I've not been good at it.
I'd say between 30 and 50 would be my gut. My gut is 30.
It's a pretty big country.
Yeah, but there's nothing. There's nothing in the middle.
You all just hang out on the coast. You liars. It's just kangaroos in the middle.
For example, right. I can't believe I didn't look at the population stats because I know that 80% of Australia lives on the coast. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that helps us. I'm gonna go 30. I think 30.
Yeah. That's where I'm leaning to.
Okay, we're going.
And we end with a correct answer.
Yes.
Well done. Ding, amazing. Ding, 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 ding. It's about 27 mil.
There you go.
Gotcha. Nice. Al's always going to throw in the soft one. He's like, I always feel bad, you know, burning these people's vibe. Well done, boys. 1 out of 3 is better than 0 out of 3. Good on your buck, Eric, getting a couple right there. Guys, heck of a fun show having you guys on.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Got to do it more when we can make the time differences work. And thanks for everyone involved with the YouTube live comments. It was a fun experience for us doing this for the first time. So dare say we'll be back at it. Maybe we'll get some draft day live behavior going this year. We'll see how we go. But look, as far as it goes for TDU, we're going to take the rest of Feb off. We'll get back into the studio at the beginning of March, what the Chargers should do in free agency and the off-season plan. So, like I said, unless there's anything to add from you guys, heck of fun. Thanks to everyone who joined in. And, that was
thanks
great
for
fun,
joining, guys.
Good to recap the show in such a fun way. So,
and TDU crew, if you guys are taking February off?
Think so, yeah.
That works great for us because Ryan and I are going to relaunch Powder Keg. So We're talking about potentially doing a show after this if Ryan still feels Ryan's on the boys or on the morning coffee. Ryan is on the late end of the end of things.
Get those energy balls out, yeah, boys.
We'll see. But we're going to dive into some off-season coffee content for everybody. Start previewing the free agencies or outgoing free agents incoming. And yeah, so tune in, guys. Looking forward to seeing y'all.
Yeah,
thank you, boys, so much.
Powder keg back. So
that was awesome. Right, it was awesome to move the chat that we all have into real life, and it was even better than I thought.
Just as chaotic, I love it.
Yeah,
thanks, boys.
That's right. All right, all guys. Right. Thanks, fellas. Geez, enjoy the month off, and we'll get stuck into some tape dogging, and we'll see you guys soon.
See you guys. Bye.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!